south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, as this show first goes out on Sunday, March 12th, 2023, and my next Expat Insider Seminar starts later that week on March 17th, here's a little heads up as far as this show goes. This week will be kind of crazy, running around doing seminar things. That means for about the next 2 weeks, these here Expat Files shows you're used to listening to, twice a week with some regularity, just might be a little bit spotty. So if there are one or two missing in the upcoming mix, it's just that I didn't have time to get on it. Anyway, probably going to miss two shows in there somewhere. So just a little heads up. Today, let's start with a little email from one of our listeners who's in the military. Yep, funny enough, I have quite a few listeners who are in the military service. I often wonder how that happened and how'd the word get out. Got quite a few listeners who are incarcerated, too. I love getting emails from those guys. They've got some perspective on life, I'll tell you. Anyway, we've been hearing a lot in the news about wokeism in the U.S. military. And, you know, I've often wondered, since I have a couple of friends, even relatives, who were former grunts, even Navy SEALs and such, I'm wondering, what's the true feeling amongst the military rank and file? It's not an organization that speaks up about those things, that speaks out of turn. So I'm wondering how they really feel about the real pansy-ass creepiness of the woke thing that seems to have penetrated the armed services, too. Obviously, it's coming from the top down, and at the top are generals and admirals, right? Yet they permitted the woke contagion to infect all the branches of the service. It's just amazing to believe those career military guys that have made it all the way to the top are buying into this stuff and even tolerating it at all. It seems like at the top of the military food chain, someone's sabotaged the whole thing and injected a brain virus. It's amazing to me to think that none of them are speaking up, maybe because they don't want to lose their pensions, get canceled out, or even get that revolving door, that military-industrial complex gravy train they're all on when they retire, slammed in their faces. You know what I'm talking about, right? How the top guys end up retiring out of the military and walking right into a six- or seven-figure job at Boeing, Rockwell, or General Dynamics. Yeah, the system's sick and rotten to the core. It's been going on like that way before wokeism ever hit. You ought to hear Tulsi Gabbard talk about that. She's ex-military, ex-congresswoman from Hawaii, too. She's blown the whistle on those guys many times in many interviews. She's really pissed off about it, but nothing gets done. We knew that already, right? That said, I'll read this email that just came in from Miss C, who's in the military. And I'll paraphrase this a little bit so she doesn't get in trouble. She says, "Johnny, I continue to love your show, and even though I was born in the 1990s, I have fully embraced my boomer mentalities. Working in the Army has become a toxic pit of wokeism that people are afraid to admit is ruining our readiness. As for me," she says, "I work in a military training unit, and the entire organization is beyond saving. For example," she says, "someone I know in my unit was reprimanded for saying the following, quote, 'We have MLK to thank for this weekend.' MLK being Martin Luther King." Wait a minute. I guess she must be referring to the fact that it's a holiday now, Martin Luther King Day, right? So anyway, sounds like she's saying some guy said, "Well, thanks to Martin Luther King, we got the day off." Sounds innocent enough to me. How about you? Anyway, she says, after he said that, he was then called on the carpet and told he was being incentive. And if you look up the word incentive, it means to incite people. She says, "I thought the whole incident was wild, Johnny. And our PA, he's pushing trans medical assistance and calls people humans, not soldiers, but humans, because the word soldier might be offensive. On top of that, Johnny, the soldiers are all fat." That's right, fat, out of shape. They have no respect for anyone anymore. Soldiers are just sort of broken. They can't even pass basic training without getting hurt. So many of them get medically chaptered out, released. at 20 years old because they've never done anything physical at all in their lives till they went into the Army. Then there's our male leader who wants to celebrate Women History Month but doesn't actually do anything for his women subordinates. I truly hope that this wokeness is just a case around here where I am, but I'm worried about the combat effectiveness of our Army. She says, I hope there's a rebound rejection of wokeism in the Army, as I'm tired of weak soldiers who are expected to protect their nation but prefer to go to the behavioral health clinic, where, by the way, almost half of military linguists are on Adderall. All right, me, Johnny, breaking in here. I'd had to look that up, the behavioral health clinics in the military. Well, it turns out, and who knew if you weren't in the military, that military mental health resources have what they call integrated behavioral health clinics, specifically set up to help and treat soldiers with substance abuse problems, mental health issues, depression, stress, and PTSD. Then she says, Johnny, I hope our military leaders take less cues from pop culture and start working on the retention of our most valuable soldiers. Then she says, you know, the older I get, the more I believe that mandated military service should be a requirement for U.S. citizens, whether it's in the actual military or the park service or Habitat for Humanity. Did I say humidity? You know what I'm talking about. She says, I really feel the youth need to be part of something bigger than what they see online or on TikTok. They need a purpose and most of all, some discipline. But worst of all, she says, is that most soldiers don't actually care. It's the vocal minority that make things harder for the rest of us. Signed, Miss C, hoping for a wake-up call in the military. All right, Miss C, thanks for that. Glad to hear from someone on the inside. If I recall, the last time she wrote was maybe a year or so ago. Or maybe it wasn't her. Someone from the military wrote me saying everyone was forced to take the jab or they'd boot you out of the service. And tens of thousands wouldn't do it, so they had to resign. Well, we can foresee some class action lawsuits there since we're all finding out. The jab was much worse than the virus itself. But you knew that already, right? Though as far as the wokeness contagion in the military, I sympathize with Miss C completely. I've spoken to quite a few military guys now. You see them hanging around here once in a while in Latin America. Every country, including every Latin American country, has a U.S. embassy and therefore a detachment of soldiers. Usually the really tough-looking jarhead types, though. That could be the plan, though, to intimidate the locals whilst they play bodyguard and nursemaids to pus-brained diplomats and embassy hacks. And of course, I mean that in the kindest, most Christian sort of way. I just looked it up. The U.S. has more than 750 military bases across the world. So if you're outside the U.S. for any time at all, you're bound to run into some soldiers, especially in the big cities and especially in the gringo bars around the embassy areas. And you know what? Off the record and after a few drinks, usually, they all say exactly the same thing. They feel the U.S. military is hopelessly corrupted by wokeism, and they're just waiting to get out and get their pensions. But they won't speak up. That's not what you do when you're in the military. Come to think of it, Miss C, what I'd really like you to do, if you can, shoot me another email and tell me why you think the guys at the top, the big brass, the generals, the admirals, you know, the career military guys and gals, why are they taking this woke crap laying down when they know it undermines the whole point of having a strong military? It just creates spinelessness, and that's the last thing you want in a soldier. Is it really because they don't want to lose those big pensions and the riches of those revolving doors into companies like Raytheon? I mean, whatever happened to nationalism and patriotism? I mean, these guys went to West Point and the military academies, right? How about the motto, don't tread on me? That's exactly what the wokesters are doing. For the big brass, it can't all be about the money. We're talking about guys that clawed their way to the top, who, in the heat of battle, would lead the charge. Have they just lost that spirit and turned into pansy asses too? Are those military guys who swore to fight to the death for their country afraid of those whining, limp-wristed, parasitic cancel culture idiots? Doesn't seem possible. Then again, maybe I got it all wrong. You tell me. All right, then how about this email from our man Bob in Oaxaca, Mexico? He starts, Dear Johnny, I'm curious of your own extreme Yanks gone rogue observations and experiences over the years. All right, Bob, me, Johnny, here just a minute breaking in. For a bit of clarification here, you call them Yanks gone rogue. We call them not so much Yanks gone rogue, but gringos gone native. Yep, gringos gone native. Yes, there's always some of that going around. Anyway, Bob continues on the theme by saying, Johnny, the most glaring example I've seen of that phenomenon myself was this 70-something fading gringo stud, in his mind anyway, hanging out in Mazatlan, Mexico. To set the story up, he lived right next to me, and he just had gotten a facelift, which somehow got infected with an obscene kind of rash from having way too many upfront and personal intimate contacts with certain less than hygienic female employees at a certain nightclub. By the way, down here a nightclub is a strip joint / whorehouse. And don't let anyone tell you differently. There is almost no such thing as a straight up strip club. Unlike up in the States where a strip club is, well, just a strip club. All the so-called nightclubs down here have private rooms on the second floor. Strip clubs or nightclubs down here are otherwise known in Espanol as clubs de nocturno. Nocturnal meaning night, of course. Anyway, Bob continues, this 70-something guy's redeeming quality was taking horse testosterone shots, which made him sort of an irritable bugger, and he'd often be seen charging down his apartment hallway, kicking in the door of people who had overpowering boom boxes and party music. And with that, Bob signs off by saying, keep the faith, Johnny. Yours truly, Bob, from Oaxaca, Mexico. All right, Bob, I got a few things to say about that. As far as the topic of gringos who've gone native, that is truly a real and predictable phenomena down here. If you're down here long enough, you'll run into them, you'll see them around. My advice, though, is don't get too friendly with them. Though there are two particular places they seem to congregate in more than any other location. Number one, beach towns. And I'm not talking about high-end touristy beach towns, too expensive. Gringos gone native, or as Bob likes to say, Yanks gone rogue, oftentimes do that because they're down on their luck. The money's not flowing in. They've been sort of forcefully reduced to backpacker status. And you could live pretty good in a Latin American beach town as long as it's not on the tourist trail. Not only that, when you're in the beach town boonies, you could get lost in the mix really easy, staying naturally scruffy and sort of just blending in. And even guys like that almost always have some kind of female companionship, oftentimes a wife or some kids, but almost never legally married, of course. And they're all living kind of on the edge, backpacker style. In other words, if you get invited to their house or place of residence, I'd advise you to make your excuses and not follow along. As for me, I make a point of not being too friendly with guys like that. The thing is, anyone who's on the edge or down on his luck will try to glom onto someone who looks like they can give you a leg up. And I'll tell you, many a clueless, green, new gringo has been sucked in by a gringo gone native and lived to regret it. Not that these guys will hurt you or damage you in any physical way. I've had gringos gone native come up to me and try to tap me for dough or lunch or a shot and a beer. They've got a certain look, too. Greasy hair. Look like they've slept in their clothes for 2 or 3 days. A cut above street bum status, but not someone you'd like to bring home to mother, you know? The thing is, though, it's infinitely easier to live that kind of life here in Latin America than it is in New York, Chicago, or Miami. Why not? You got the great climate, the ultra-cheap rent, mangoes and avocados virtually falling off the trees, and if you live in a scruffy body, you can blend right in. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be friendly and nice to these guys. Though with many of them, they have a purpose. There's a method to their madness. When they spot a green, newly arrived gringo, they know your Spanish sucks, and they know, after a couple of days of language frustration, talking to any gringo who speaks English is a relief. So, by all means, be cordial, but not too friendly. Because believe me, if you just buy that guy a drink, you're opening the floodgates, and you just might never get rid of him. In fact, I remember not too long ago, I was walking the beach in Roatan with two gringos I'd just met. Not cheap-ass backpackers, but low-budget scuba diver types. You probably knew that Roatan is one of the best cheap scuba diving places in the world. Well, we were walking along on a beautiful white sand beach called the West End, when one of them said under his breath, oh shit, here he comes. And I said, here who comes? He said that scruffy American dude that keeps showing up. He spotted a greasy-haired guy about a block away walking towards us waving. And the scuba diver guy said to me and his buddy, how can we get rid of him? Well, it turns out he was one of the first people they met when they first booked their hotel, kind of a lower-class hotel, on the beach. And being friendly new arrivals, they bought the guy a drink, and since then, they haven't been able to get rid of him. He showed up for breakfast next day at their hotel, for lunch at a little cafe, and when they were walking around later, that gringo gone to seed would inevitably show up. By the way, if there's one thing I dislike myself, when I'm having lunch or dinner, I don't mind people I don't know very well coming up and saying hi, but I don't like them standing there talking while I'm shoveling my face. I don't know about you, but when I'm eating, I like to be left in peace. Hey, but that's just me. So anyway, look out for Gringos Gone Native or Gringos Gone to Seed when you're at one of those little beach towns. By the way, you'll rarely see those guys, or at least they won't bother you, when you're on the tourist trail in a beach town. Because after a while, they get to be known as local pests. And the tourist cops will kind of keep moving along. Local businessmen don't like them hanging around either. Why? Well, because they're not good for business. On top of that, tourist beach towns are expensive. And if there's one thing Gringos Gone Native have in common, is they're basically in that condition because they're generally pretty broke. And a lot of them, if not most of them, are alcoholics. And even though a lot of them are getting $1,500 a month or so from Social Security or disability, when you're a drinker, that won't last you the month. So anyway, just a little warning there. But it's not only the little beach towns in the boonies you'll run into these guys. You'll nearly always find one or two of them hanging around in gringo expat bars. They'll generally be the two greasiest looking, scruffiest guys in the place. If you see one of these guys sitting at a bar stool and you pull up next to him, he'll most likely have lots of great stories and you will be amused. Just a little advice here. Don't let him know exactly where you're staying or tomorrow morning or even that night. He could be camping out on your doorstep. Now, of course, there are some guys who've gone native who've decided to live their lives way out in the boonies in a little indigenous town where they're practically only gringo there. In that case, they've almost always got a local Latina wife or indigenous wife and a family. In fact, a lot of these guys are now illegal in their chosen Latin country because they've sort of slipped off the grid and failed to renew their passports. In fact, in Guatemala, there seems to be an overabundance of those types living in some of the smaller towns like San Marcos around Lake Atitlan, the most beautiful lake in the world. So, be advised. If you happen to visit there, and I recommend it, it's pretty cool. If the lighting is right, you blink too fast and you let your mind wander. You could be fooled into thinking that some of the guys there are refugees from Woodstock. Only we're not talking about adolescents or 20-somethings. These guys are in their 60s and 70s. Though because Lake Atitlan's kind of a special place, it's got a special aura to it. That draw of the sort of ex-hippie types has created a kind of a subculture of gentrified hippies. That is, Woodstock and Flower Power generation types who found, by hook and crook, a financial niche. Long ago, they found it was advantageous to latch onto capitalism, and now they're gentrified hippies with dough. Gentrified hippies, I might add, with decent clothes and who bathe regularly. They've got little boutiques, mom-and-pop hotels, wellness and holistic healing centers. They're into the new age mumbo-jumbo and have done well by it. And since they all kind of look like they're related to David Crosby, they do fit the definition of gringos gone native. Now, as for me, and I think most of you listeners, you can only take so much of a guy spouting new age mumbo jumbo. So even if you make friends with some of these guys, these gentrified hippie types, they don't want anything from you. They're not looking to get anything out of you like money or drinks or food, but they'll be full of that new age mumbo jumbo, and I don't have much patience for that. How about you? And you just know right away you're going to get an earful when the guy or gal in question tells you their kids' names are Rainbow and Turquoise. Of course, the next thing out of their mouth is, what's your sign? I'll tell you, that's my cue to go to the John or ask the waiter for the check. By the way, when emailer Bob mentioned that 70-something guy who seemed to be addicted to strip clubs, well, I have to tell you, that's a very common thing down here for newly arrived gringos who are single, especially, I'd say, the over 40 crowd. Fact is, I've heard so many stories from gringos and expats who got hooked on that kind of routine. Every one of them admitted it was fun at first, but it really took its toll. The fact is, a lot of single gringos and expats come down and put that gringo advantage of theirs into high gear with the wrong people. You don't want to be that guy because eventually, when you hang around with those types of people, at those kinds of clubs, which aren't always in the best of neighborhoods, the bad guys kind of figure you got money, you get drunk, and you like to party. That could easily make you a mark. It's a very precarious lifestyle that does not have a good ending. Though a lot of short-term happy endings, maybe. But an overall good ending? Not likely. In fact, one American guy I know who owned and operated a couple of maquilas down here. Maquilas, you know, clothing factories down here in Latin America. He lived that lifestyle for around 5 years. He said he didn't know anyone when he first came down, and that was a logical step. Go to the strip clubs. He told me after waking up with one too many hangovers that he was going to absolutely quit that lifestyle settle down with a nice Latina and get married, have a family, kids, and all that. He figured if he didn't, in 2 or 3 more years, he'd be dead. He didn't want to die or go out like a washed-out gringo gone native. As a result, found a nice, straight-shooting Latina, had kids and a family, and he's happier than a pig in poop, as they say. Nope, he didn't find her at the strip club. He didn't have a gringo savior complex. That is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the way to find the love of your life. Though some stupid gringos fall into that trap, too. All right, now an email from Down Under, from Ben. He says, G'day, Johnny, old mate. Can you throw me on the list for information on El Salvador's volcano bonds when you get the good oil on it, mate? Also, Johnny, you were talking last show about living in residential towers. I'd like to know what the ongoing costs of having a place like that, the so-called maintenance fee. He says, I think you guys call it HOA or homeowners association fees. We call them the body corporate here down under. Then he says, by the way, Johnny, whenever we see those dopey house shows from the USA, I'm always shocked at how much people are content to pay to live in a place they just bought. You know, ongoing monthly expenses. Hopefully, they're a bit more manageable down there in Latin America. Signed, Ben. Cheers from Down Under. By the way, Ben, you know that band that made Down Under famous? That would be Men at Work. Remember them? I guess for a while, they were your number one musical export. Anyway, I always thought if you guys are from Down Under, then we're from Up Over, right? Is that what you call us behind our backs? But regarding those housing fees, those HOA fees you're talking about, it's an interesting thing that throughout Latin America, it seems to be they charge about $1 per square foot of living space for what they call the monthly maintenance fee, and that's for brand new buildings. So let's say you're living in a 1,000-square-foot apartment on the 5th floor, you'd be paying about $100 a month for your maintenance fee, which includes garbage, security, and often water. That means, of course, if you had a 2,000-square-foot apartment, which is a pretty big space, that's $200 a month. However, I have noticed in the gringoized areas, especially like Cancun or even gringoized areas of Medellin, Colombia, like Poblado, your maintenance fees in a residential tower or even apartment complex could be twice that. It's that gringo effect again that kind of jacks up all the prices. But again, if you're off the gringo tourist trail in a brand new building now, you pay about $1 a square foot. Then again, if you're living in an older residential tower, something maybe 15, 20, 30 years old, and believe me, some of those places are really nice. They have the greatest, most artistic old colonial details you wouldn't believe. Then you could be paying about half those rates. That's 50 cents a square foot of living space. In other words, $50 for a 1,000-square-foot apartment. And believe it or not, in some of those older buildings, electricity is included in that maintenance cost. Though almost all homeowners associations do include garbage and water. Oh, and I forgot to mention, most all residential towers down here, whether they're new or old, have a common propane gas hookup system. You know, for your gas stove, clothes dryer, and hot water. And I'd say about 50% of the residential towers and apartment buildings include that in your maintenance payment, too. The fact is, propane gas or natural gas is pretty cheap down here. Lots of cars and taxis have converted to propane gas, too. So if the driver opens the trunk, you'll often see a big propane tank in there. I've ridden in quite a few taxis that are powered by propane gas, and they've got a tiny little smell to them. It's not objectionable, though. Though the last time I rented in a residential tower, they had a big propane tank in the underground parking garage. And right next to it were a row of gas meters, so everyone was metered and thus got a monthly bill from the homeowners association. It wasn't included in the maintenance. And in the place I was renting, there was a gas stove, gas dryer, and gas hot water heater. My monthly gas bill over and above the maintenance cost was around $8 to $12 a month. Then again, I've been in residential towers where the gas bill was included in your maintenance fee. Sometimes even internet service is included. So it's hit and miss, 50-50. Oh, and if your complex has a pool, that usually adds about $25 extra to the monthly maintenance fee. Now, as far as the U.S., well, I can tell you my brother bought it into a brand new apartment complex in North Chicago. His place is around 1,400 square feet, and he pays around $300 a month for maintenance. So based on the costs here in Latin America of $1 a square foot, he's paying about double that. Now, Ben from Down Under, who wrote the email, he never told us what they charge for maintenance on apartment complexes in his area. So, Ben, why don't you shoot that info to us so we can get some comparisons? Eh, mate? By the way, I'm sure you know that here in Latin America, they don't go by square foot. They go by square meters. So if you get a place that's, let's say, 200 square meters, it's really easy to approximate what the square footage is. Just add a zero. A place that's 200 square meters is therefore 2,000 square feet. A place that's 100 square meters, 1,000 square feet. 50 square meters, 500 square feet. You don't need a calculator. It's dead easy. Just add a zero. And finally, an email from Kurt. He says, Johnny, if you live in one of the tourist areas in Mexico, as long as you stick to that area, you'll be completely safe. However, if you decide to buy or rent a place in Mexico and think you're just going to pop over the border because you live in Arizona or California just for the weekend, a 2 or 3 hour drive, sounds great, right? You just jump in your car in 2 or 3 hours, you're in a completely different environment, the land of sun and fun and leisure. Well, not so fast, Johnny. I've driven the length of Mexico 3 times. I got robbed by the police all 3 times, twice even on one trip, like a bad B-movie. The cops who robbed me actually called ahead to let their buddies repeat the act. I went to Puebla and lodged an official complaint with their names and badge numbers. A month later, I got an official letter saying they received my complaint. Other than that, more than a year has passed. Nothing. Nada. Zip. Par for the course. The question is, how do you call the cops on the cops? What a corrupt bunch they are. And they keep it all in the family. All the locals know about it, but they keep their mouths shut. They know where the narcos and the gangs are too, but the police protect them. They work for them and are part of that whole organization. You have to be, or else. So who can you blame? So bottom line, anyone who drives outside of the tourist areas, it's no secret. They all know the score. They've been forewarned. And if something happens to them, I have no sympathy. However, if you're the young, curious, adventurous type, and you feel like driving through Mexico because they do have some awful nice scenery, my advice, drive down a car with a few dents in it, one that's 20 years old or so. I remember in the States some years ago, they used to have a car rental agency where I lived called Rent-A-Rec. I think that would be a great business in Mexico. So yes, Mexico is definitely safe if you live in a tourist area. Though in time that gets boring too and you want to adventure out. Spread your wings, so to speak. But when you do, you'll find trouble or it will find you. Like you always say, Johnny, a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Signed, Archie C. from Nevada. Well, thanks for that, Archie, but I do have one question. Why did you drive through Mexico the second time after being robbed? And the third time after being robbed the second time? Just curious.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.